Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's Text Line Tuesday. Hit us up at 590-590 and follow us on our socials, JD Bunkus, Ailish Warfar, and Blake Murphy. And yesterday we got a really great interview with Josh Hosang. We pre-taped it. He's over in Switzerland heading to the Olympics in a few short days. So we're going to play that for you. And yeah, send in your texts. Let us know what you think. And we really enjoyed talking to Josh and getting his perspective. So here you go.
Very pleased to be joined by Toronto Marlies forward and now member of Canada's men's Olympic rosters, Josh Hosang. What's up, man? Congratulations.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, it's great, man. The Canadian Olympic roster, you have become the number one reason for Leaf fans to watch Team Canada. How does that feel?
Yeah, it's pretty special. I mean, I'm just happy that I can make the fans back home proud, and for me, that's definitely my focus going in, is just making Toronto proud and definitely the country. And you know, I wouldn't be able to do it without them and without the support that I've gotten from the Leafs organization and the Marlies organization, and I'm forever grateful to them.
So what was the process like getting the call, getting the heads up that you're going to be in the conversation and then you're going to head over there? Like, give us a little run through of the last month, I assume.
Yeah, I thought it was a joke. I thought it was like Ashton Kutcher, like, gotcha. And I couldn't believe it when they called me. I thought I was being punked. But they were super nice. And, you know, they told me that they were going to put me on the long list. And if I'm being honest, I didn't really think anything of it. You know, I know that things have been going well in Toronto, but this is the Olympics. We're talking about representing your country. And, you know, I just continued to play my game and work hard down there. And eventually they gave me the call saying that they wanted me on the roster. And I was absolutely blown away. You know, I'm so humbled by this opportunity. It's been definitely mixed feelings, because it's been really sad for me seeing all the NHL players who can't go, and some of the stories like Brad Marchand, Steven Stamkos, Connor McDavid, John Tavares, Mitch Marner, like all these guys who were sort of in the running to play for Canada, and to see all of them, you know, not being able to go and then get a call, it's bittersweet, but I'm honored, and I hope that I can make those guys and my country proud.
So, Josh, that almost happened to you as well. So for anyone who doesn't know, you're with the Marlies on an AHL contract, and that's why you're eligible to go to the Olympics and represent Team Canada. There was a stretch there, though, where the Leafs were pretty short on forwards. Was there any discussion about, hey, you know, we could give you an NHL deal now, and you'll come up for a couple games, but then you can't go to the Olympics? Did you have to make a decision there, or did you have conversations with the Leafs front office around that?
That's not really my place to speak. You know, if you guys want to inquire more about that, you can talk to Kyle. I think that everything that happens in-house should stay in-house, unless he decides otherwise. So, yeah, that's something that I'm not really going to comment on.
I'm going to go back to Team Canada here for a second. I remember when you got snubbed from the U18 program. I remember when you got snubbed from the World Juniors. And it was coming off a season where you had scored, I think, 85 points in 67 games. And I wonder if there was just a bit of an extra, moment of reflection or feeling of coming full circle, being named to the Olympic team after that had happened to you so early in your career.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think anyone who knows anything about my career, it's definitely been up and down. There's been some great moments that, you know, I've thoroughly enjoyed and will never forget. And there's been some not so great moments that I won't forget either. And, you know, that was definitely a part of it, you know, not getting picked for those teams. But the players who got picked for those teams were extraordinary players. And the guys that I got, you know, beat out by, we're all fantastic players, so that didn't really bother me that much. I understand hockey's a business, and these guys got to make some tough decisions. But in terms of the full circle stuff, yeah, for me, it's crazy. I mean, I went from nobody in the NHL wanting me this summer, you know, my agent making calls, and, you know, some, I would say, 2/3 of the teams didn't even give my my agent the time of day. And Toronto, they heard him out, and Kyle said that he had been kind of keeping tabs on me and where my game was. And you know, from there the relationship flourished. I went on a PTO, but there's a lot of people who may not know I went there actually at the beginning of August, and that was the start of my PTO. It wasn't sort of a training camp decision. Like I went there and I did my best to put my best foot forward, and things turned out super well. And I think what's really helped me through this sort of transition from where I was to where I am now is I think I was relatively entitled when I was younger. I wanted things to be given to me, and whether I felt I deserved them or not, that's not how you operate. And so I would say that my message to any of the young players out there is just remain grateful for the opportunity that you've been given. I mean, the ability to play hockey as a job for a living, whether you're in the American League, Europe, the NHL, is such a blessing. And it's something that I didn't fully appreciate, I think, because I was too focused on the end goal. And so now I just kind of focus on the journey and day by day, you know, enjoying my teammates and enjoying my coaching staff and trying to get to know everyone and build relationships and connections. And I think that that's what's driven me to where I am today.
Josh, you mentioned your story being an example for younger players coming up. I know you're only 26, but you've been all over in a lot of different situations with a couple of very young prospect-type guys on this Canadian Olympic roster with you. Do you find yourself early on here sliding into a bit of a leadership role?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing my best to kind of keep the same things that got me here. And one of the big things that I tried to do in Toronto is speak to the younger kids and even the older guys and just try to give advice and give a little bit perspective on how I see the game. And they can take from that what they need. From what I've seen, I mean, Owen Power is an absolute stud. Kent Johnson is unbelievable, and so is McTavish. So, I mean, hockey is definitely in good hands. If you're a hockey fan, the future is looking mighty bright on the Canadian side. So I don't think these guys need too much help from me, but definitely when it comes to like the off-ice stuff, I've definitely done a good job of figuring out what not to do. And so you know, I kind of give them the ins and outs, some of the things that I've learned, and you know, hopefully that helps them moving forward.
You know, man, I look back though, it's interesting you're coming on and talking about this with us, and I wonder if in this reflection or in trying to do self-growth, you think about stuff versus like, hey, what's entitled versus what is confident? What is entitled versus what is being bold and believing in yourself? Because I'll admit that I remember being very excited for your career, because I've been someone who has thought that hockey can be very bland at times, and that it is a little bit too much of, hey, not being willing to celebrate your accomplishments, or not being forward and vocal in terms of believing in yourself and wanting to aspire for big things. And so, yeah, like, do you say stuff when you're 18 years old that you probably won't say when you're 26? Yeah, there's probably stuff now when you're 26 that you won't say when you're 35. But have you found it at all difficult to kind of balance that new perspective for you while maintaining, you know, that self-belief, that self-confidence, and that swagger?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the things that really helped me is I went to therapy, because like you said, like, that's a really tough thing to navigate, is like, you want to be yourself, but you also want to achieve all the goals that you've set. And so finding a blend of the two can be extremely difficult. And so my therapist, she's an absolute angel. I think everyone should go to therapy. She really gave me a lot of perspective, and she posed a lot of really good questions. For example, she always encouraged me to be confident in who I am and to never lose that, you know, that slight edge, you know, that you believe that you can do what others may not be able to do, but also being humble enough to recognize when and when not it's the time to do it. And I think that that's a really interesting thing to grasp, because it's not easy. It's all something that you learn through experience. And so I think for me, one of the biggest things that's shifted is I still carry the confidence that I have on the ice. I still believe everything, you know, that I've said at different points in my career, but I don't feel like I constantly need to prove it to people. I focus more on how I can be the best hockey player that I can be, and I try to prove it to myself. And I think that when you're focused on you and how you can prove, you know, you are as good as you think you are, you can be a great teammate. You can be a great defender. You can be a great offensive player. I think that when you try to focus on that, it's much better than talking about it. And I think that there's moments. I mean, like, I'm loving what Joe Burrow has been doing lately, and he's been confident, but he's winning, you know. And so I think it's a lot easier when things are going well to kind of have that swagger. And I hope every NHL player does. I think you've seen it with Brad Marchand. I mean, like, I know he didn't intend it the way that it came across, but it was hilarious when he said he was a Ferrari and Trocheck was a Prius. Like, that killed me. Like, I you know, like, he doesn't, I think for anyone in hockey, you know, he doesn't mean it like as maybe blunt as it sounds, but like, that confidence is what has made Marchand one of the best players of the NHL. Like, if he loses that, he's not the same player. So, like, yeah, I think it's important to have that blend. And I think respect, like, you have to respect the opportunity that you've been given and don't take it for granted. And I think one of the things that I did maybe a little bit wrong when I was younger is I didn't respect the situations that I was in all the time. And I've tried to bring myself to center and really become humble in those areas. And it's really helped me. Like, I'm a lot happier now. Like, when I was confident and when I was, I guess, a little bit overly confident in saying those things, you know, like, a lot of the time I was sad. Like, and I felt like things weren't going the way that I felt they should. And I was really hard on myself. And now, like, I'm, like, happy all the time. So, I mean, it's been a huge change. And like I said, like, I wouldn't have been able to do it without my therapist. I wouldn't have been able to do it without Kyle, the people in Sweden, my agent, my family, my friends, like, everyone who's close to me. Like, this Hockey Canada selection is not Josh Ostang doing great things. This is Josh Ostang being surrounded by great people.
I really just want to say that I respect your answer a lot. As someone that's played hockey my whole life, I feel like it's just refreshing to hear someone be able to talk about the mental side of the game and the struggles that, you know, you put on yourself, a lot of pressure and a lot of onus on being successful. And sometimes it's hard to have that boundary of, like, that what is cocky and what is confidence. So I just, you know, I think what you're saying is an awesome way to put it. And especially when you're trying to weigh coming into the Olympics, like, you're weighing, wow, this is probably the biggest accolade that I've ever had. What an opportunity for me to represent my country. Like, I'm really happy about that. But then you're also balancing, like, this could be an opportunity for me to make a stand for myself and to be an NHL level caliber player when I come out of this. Is that something that you're struggling with going in and cherishing the moment and knowing this is, you know, an honor that you've been waiting for your whole life, but also kind of a prove it type of tournament for you as well?
I don't really think about it that way, because this is not about me. This is about Canada. You know, this is about the players that I'm playing with. And obviously, if I play well, I know it can lead to great things. But if I don't play well and we win, that's all that matters. You know, like, my focus is on what we can accomplish as a group. And I think that I have a lot to offer. And there'll be times where I will get the opportunity to show that, and hope all goes well. But for me, like, I think if you, like I said earlier, like, when you focus on the end, you miss everything in between. And, like, I don't want to do that here. So, like, I literally haven't even thought about, like, it sounds crazy, but I haven't even thought about the tournament yet. Like, I just think about, like, the next day, I try to live in the moment. And that's the, you know, the teachings that I've learned from my mom, my dad, my therapist, and, you know, the whole religion of Buddhism, like just staying in the moment. And like I said, it's made my life so much more peaceful, like so much more calm. I'm not, you know, running a million thoughts through my head. What if this, what if that? Like, I just think that I take things as they come. I try to ride the wave, go with the flow. As Bruce Lee says, be water.
Josh, you sound like you're in a great place. And I'm sure that a lot of this just comes with, you know, experience and age and perspective, right? Some of these growing opportunities, they're just natural. And you seem like a bright guy. And so, yeah, things come across your way. Maybe you can process them a little differently. But you mentioned Sweden in your answer when you talked about, hey, the support structures that were around you and that helped you get to the spot that you're in right now. And yeah, this past off season or that year in Sweden, you know, you were there for what, like 10, I think you only played like 10 games in Sweden. What was that like? Like, was there, I don't want to like make this almost as though it was just like one thing or one moment. Like I said, I'm sure it's a myriad of things, but was there something for you where something clicked where you knew, hey, you know what? I do want to go and try and get some therapy, or, hey, you know what? I do need to change my approach here. Like, was there something in particular where you're going to look back on and say, you know what? This was actually a hinge moment for me.
Yeah. So my coach, back in Sweden, he asked me if I wanted to be a hockey player. Mm-hmm. And my immediate answer was yes. And he said, no. He said, Josh, do you want to be a hockey player? And then I didn't know what to say. And that was crazy because I've been playing hockey my whole life. And I didn't know if I was playing hockey just because I'd been playing it my whole life, or because I wanted to play in the NHL, or because I wanted to make money. I genuinely didn't know the answer, and it like blew my mind. I had never like think about it in like whatever 24 years of living at that point, 25 years of living, I never, or since I was probably 16, I hadn't asked myself like, do you want to play hockey and why? And when he asked me that, I like took some time to think, and I realized like I just love the game. Like when you have the puck and you're crossing over through the neutral zone and the defender's panicking and you got guys coming in late and you know, the game is on your stick. Like, there's no better feeling in the world than that. Like, money, fame, like, you can't buy that. And, like, for me, just bringing it back to that, like, that feeling that the wind, you know, when you're skating is 100 miles per hour, the sound of your blades carving through the ice, like, it's stuff that, like, only hockey players understand. And I hope that every hockey player comes back to that, like just the joy that it brings. And when I started looking at it from the standpoint of joy and wanting to just be the best version of myself, both on and off the ice, everything just became easy. Like it just became so easy. I think that I got out of my head. I think that I stopped making things so complicated. I think that I realized that hockey's a job. There's a lot of things that go into hockey that I don't like, but I love, love hockey. And so those things are sacrifices that each individual has to make. For some guys, they don't get to see their family, right? Everything else is easy for them, but they don't get to see their family, and that's really hard. For me, maybe it's being a little bit more diligent with my preparation, being a little bit more diligent with my timing, both in games and off the ice. And that's not stuff I enjoy. I don't wake up and like, oh, I can't wait to be on time for this meeting. But like, what I do enjoy is that if I prepare and if I show up to the meeting on time, that I get to play the game I love. It's simple.
Hey. Yeah, I mean, it sounds simple when, yeah, you're putting it this way. Again, it's really great perspective, man. It sounds like you're doing really well. And I will say that I'm not watching every single Marlies game, let's be honest here. Like, but when I do see you playing, when I see you playing, man, you look like someone who is playing with joy right now. You look happy, and it's being backed up with success. You know, you're putting together a really successful campaign. You deserve to be on this Olympic team, and I really, really wish you the best of luck, man, with everything that's going on. And I hope that, yeah, two-thirds of the league that wouldn't take the call end up regretting it. This was great.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
That was Josh Hosang, Marley's forward and now member of Team Canada. So that was a really enjoyable interview. I got to say, we got told that we were going to be talking to Josh near the end of our show yesterday. And so it was kind of a bit of, I don't want to say a scramble to figure out what we're going to talk about with him, but it's not our normal interview prep where we have at least a few hours to get something done. We know the night before we go into it, the three of us have a bit of a chat as to where it's going to go. We got some quick brush strokes as to, hey, what is this going to be about? But it was pretty clear early on that he was not, that he didn't want to talk a lot about the Leafs. And I thought that the interview would be a lot more about, hey, how the play is going right now, how his relationship is with Dubas, what the organization is asking of him. But I love when athletes are so refreshing in Canada like that, because when, okay, not everyone's as articulate as Josh Hosang, right? Not everybody's as thoughtful or has put as much time into thinking about themselves and growth and their careers as that guy. Clearly. We all know that that's an immense... All three of us are people who have gone to therapy. All three of us are big self-improvement people. All three of us, I think, were able to pick up on what he was talking about because we related to many of those things in many ways. I know for me, certainly personally, listening to him talk about ways that he acted when he was younger versus way that he acted now resonates with me deeply, and I always have time for people like that. I'm a big believer in you make mistakes. That's not a big issue. It's about being a repeater of those mistakes over and over and over again and constantly shifting the blame to others. I thought his perspective was phenomenal. And I really do hope now that... I'll admit, I didn't really care about Josh Hosang. I thought he was an interesting piece that the Leafs got. I haven't actively rooted for him because I haven't really cared. I don't root for most AHL players to make it to the pros. Once they get there, I think it's a cool story, but I don't actively root. The idea of self-improvement, having a moment where you know you have to get better, and then not only saying you have to get better, but applying it in practice. And we don't know. Maybe it's just the one interview. Maybe it's not as drastic as it seemed with him, but it sure seemed genuine with him. And it sure seemed like he was a guy who gets it. And that is the type of person that I openly root for in sports.
I'm with you. And you know, DeMar DeRozan's coming back to Toronto on Thursday, and sure, it is what it is with limited crowds and stuff like that, but we've been putting together some stuff. And yeah, DeMar's been back with San Antonio already. It's not the Kyle thing where it's his first time back or anything like that. But I got asked to reflect on, like, what's your favorite DeMar moment or story or whatever, and it's honestly, like, there are a million things on the court, but it's that openness and vulnerability off the court around mental health that I think is going to be DeMar's lasting legacy. And what Josh was talking to us about is a little different. It's a little bit more about, you know, growing up and turning from a kid into a young man and someone who, by his own estimation, is a leader on that Olympic team. But I think, you know, all of these guys, the more they talk about this, a player who's going to be representing Canada in the Olympics, being open about how therapy has helped, not just his mental health, but the performance component of this as well. And we should all want mental health to be something that's valued in sports because it's a component of health, and we want healthy, happy people around us. But if you want to be cynical and you want to look at it coldly and that's all you care about, it's also clearly a real performance component for a lot of guys, a lot of players, and you can't ignore one and expect everything to just, you know, go smoothly on the ice if everything's not smooth off the ice.
Yeah, and I mentioned it during the interview how I just took a moment to listen to his words. And as a hockey player myself, I don't really hear many people kind of give themselves the credit for learning from their mistakes. And I think that that was a really refreshing perspective. Obviously, when you think of Josh Hosang coming in, people were like, oh, there's a lot of red flags. You know, he's, you know, not always been the best character guy, and kind of wrote him off in a sense. And I think that he did a really good job at saying, yeah, you know, there's things I want to learn from. And we can all put that into our own lives and realize, like, maybe sometimes when I was working in my early 20s, I thought that I knew everything, or in college, like, you can think back to a time, anyone listening, of where you needed to grow. And he's at the biggest stage in the world trying to be an NHL player. he doesn't have the success he wants, and he finds a way to learn from that and grow. And so, you know, I just became a huge fan of him just from that interview alone, listening to everything he said and how he put things into practice. So I just, you know, I can't wait to see what he does at the Olympics. I feel really strongly that he's in a really good place, and that matters so much when it comes to sports, you know, whether he's seeing a sports psychologist or not, or how he puts that into practice. I just thought it was a really great interview. I'm so glad we got a chance to highlight a different side of Josh Hosang that many people haven't really put time and effort into understanding.
Yeah, and a lot of times that's what it takes is it's weird calling it a rock bottom moment, but when you're playing still professional hockey and you're in Sweden, right, it probably wasn't the worst life that Josh was living at that moment. But just those moments of actualization that you'll have where, oh, okay, something actually does need to change now if I want to see better results. And it is one thing to say, okay, well, you got to take those first steps. You have to be able to actually put those into practice. It is more than just what it is in that one moment, or not feeling down on yourself, or not just being able to let it become something where you continue to point fingers at others. And so to me anyways, it just sounded like, and let's be honest here, I don't know Josh's past other than things that have been told to me secondhand, or things that have been reported. And none of it has been major issues, right? It's stuff that he talked about where, like, we're not talking, I just want to make it clear that we're not talking about someone who got into actual trouble with the law, for example, when he's going, hey, I learned from my mistakes. We're talking about someone who just was obviously very cocky, very brazen, was not afraid at all to say any type of opinion about what his career or his future was going to be like, and someone who missed meetings and who was not reliable when it came to being on time, and there was always stories about alarm clocks and excuses with showing up. But
and a lot
of
that's just immaturity, as you said. Like,
right,
just immaturity. You haven't fully grown into who you're going to be.
Well, it is also, I got to say, a little, if we're going to do the whole looking inward thing sometimes, it was another one of those moments where you say, this guy right now is 26 years old. You know, that being a professional athlete, and this is not to do the whole everything is excusable or whatever, but yeah, that dude's coming in when they're 19, 20 years old and getting interviewed by major, like, professional interviewers and getting you to say certain things that you have to carry around for your entire life, right? It is a bit of perspective to just remember, hey, how young these guys are when we're judging them, and especially when we're doing it with judgments of them as people, it can feel a little foolish sometimes when you step back and go, oh right, we were really upset at the 21-year-old who missed getting up on time when old JD had to withdraw from classes at Carleton because he thought he could get up for an 8:30 class, and then a month in realized, oh boy, I won't pass this class, I better pull out of this class. Like, I see it, I understand it fully, but yes, it is just kind of, you go, eh, all right, maybe we shouldn't do this too seriously sometimes. Maybe we should take a breath before we launch some of our critiques, let's just say. just a little. Other times, no, but sometimes, yes. Maybe that's something to chew on. Blake, you got something else to chew on?
It is time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum,
quickly before we hit the break and start taking your texts at 590-590. We've talked the last couple weeks, and we'll talk a lot more over these next 2 weeks, about the Los Angeles Rams and how they've built their team to this point. And that has included being hyper-aggressive in terms of trading draft picks, because there's an acknowledgement there that sometimes windows are short. And sometimes, especially if you're in a new market and a new stadium, you want to maximize that. So I've been thinking about that, and I've been thinking about it through the lens of the Rams, and I've been thinking about it through the lens of Daryl Morey and the Philadelphia 76ers, who are going to squander another year of Joel Embiid at MVP caliber play. I've also been thinking about it in terms of the Toronto Blue Jays, who we learned a little bit in 2015 and 2016, just how fun those playoff runs can be, and just how little you might come to regret the prospects you give up. Keith Law at The Athletic yesterday released his latest top 100 prospects. Jays had four in the top 100: Gabby Moreno, Aurelvis Martinez, Kevin Smith, and Jordan Groshans. January 4th, Fangraphs released theirs. Mourinho and Aurelvis Martinez being the top two in the system were agreed upon. The rankings beyond those two, dramatically different. They had Kevin Smith 16th in the system. Keith Awesome 89th in all of baseball. All of that is to say there's a ton of variation in prospect valuation. We know very little about projecting prospects. Look at the Los Angeles Rams. Look at the way that they valued future assets in terms of maximizing what might be a shorter near-term window. Put your chips in the middle. Put your chips in the middle. We don't know anything about the future, or we know far less about it than we know about the present. And in the present right now, Toronto Blue Jays, once you have a CBA, you can be a title contender. So look to the Los Angeles Rams. That's something to chew on. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to take your text. 590, 590. Keep them coming. Leafs, Raptors, NFL, whatever you got. We'll answer those after the break. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan. Text line Tuesday, 590-590. We've been getting some great texts about that Josh Hosang interview, and a lot of people asking where they can find it. Well, on our podcast. So type in the Fan Morning Show on Spotify or Apple, and we divide each podcast segment into the hour. So that would be the second podcast of the day. You can listen to all four. That'd be great. Like, subscribe, download, 5 stars. But if you're looking to re-listen to the Josh Hosang interview. A couple of people in the text line have said they want to send it to their children. I think that's really wonderful. You can do that once it's up. Should be shortly after this hour. So take a look at that. And thanks for supporting. But you must also give us 5 stars if you're going to send it to your kids, okay?
So to those of you that are new today that just so happen to stumble across the show, welcome. And Ailish's advice to you is, without any commentary whatsoever, this isn't for you. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for enjoying the interview. To those of you that listen to this on the regular and are asking that question with the amount of times the three of us plug our podcast and beg you to subscribe to the podcast and leave us. Shame on you. Also, we're having problems with Spotify right now. I don't know what exactly it is, but it's continued throughout the day. It's something to do with all of our shows, not just ours, which is great. We love it. But maybe if you're looking to listen to the interview right now, you go over to Apple, and if you don't, you don't use an iPhone, go over and use just our website. I think it's on Google Play too, but I've never used Google Play. Have you guys ever used that?
I don't know anything about Google Play.
Exactly. I am the most out of touch with Google Play ever, so I have no clue. But
it's apparently there too. You're right.
It's apparently there too. Google Play does exist, so some people say to me. All the Google Play people out there, stand up. Shoot me text. Why you use Google Play? How are you?
What are Sell you me doing? On it in one text.
How did you end up on the one that's the outsider one? It's weird.
I think that's what people
Google,
that use, like Samsung too, or they have those Google phones. Like, I don't know.
I guess, but that's who uses Spotify. Who doesn't just use Spotify in that regard? I don't know. It's just weird. It's just an odd one to me. And you can, of course, always go to Sportsnet 590's main page, and the interview will be up there. We'll share it on Twitter and on Instagram, so make sure that you follow us there, at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, and at Blake Murphy ODC, or Blake Murphy. Let's get into the text. Now that
I've scolded
people.
Tell me where you would like to start. Give me
I don't care. Whatever.
Direction.
Whatever you like. Whatever. What do the people have? Direction.
Start
fun.
In the middle.
I want some fun.
Okay. We've got fun. Nobody's fun this morning. Everyone's in one.
Wow. No fun?
Here's a good one. I think it's an interesting question when we look ahead to the Super Bowl in a couple weeks. But who's the Super Bowl bigger for, Burrow or Stafford? Although Burrow has a lot more time left in the league, I think Stafford's path to get here again next year is way more clear. Jason in Toronto.
Jason, you're out of your mind even asking this question. It's obviously Stafford by the factor of 10 billion. Stafford's 33 years old, and he's going to inherit the Ben Roethlisberger Award for guy who leaves every game hurt at some point. Have you not seen Stafford, the way he's gutting out these games? That dude is hanging in the pocket, living completely fearlessly, and willing to take any body damage right now to win a Super Bowl. Joe Burrow is, what, 24 years old on a Bengals team that no one expected to be here, tied to Ja'Marr Chase?
I think if they lose, he's like, it doesn't even
face
the Bengals, right? It's like, wow, you made it. Congrats. So
Bengals fans beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead. That's their Super Bowl. They're going to get waxed here. So Matthew Stafford is in L.A. at his home stadium with an opportunity to win this. The path more clear thing I agree with in terms of, it would be easier for the Rams to get back to the Super Bowl next year because the NFC is not nearly as daunting as the AFC. It's why Tom Brady, come back, Tom Brady. You can do it, Tom. Figure it out. Just make some tweaks. Don't just leave. Why Aaron Rodgers, the rumors about him going to Denver, have got to be some of the dumbest things that have ever happened. Why would you want to go to the harder conference? So you want to go face Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes four times a year? You want to go through the gauntlet of the AFC instead of your layup cupcake schedule of getting to play the Detroit Lions and the Chicago Bears, the Minnesota Vikings? Yeah, okay, Aaron. Yeah, I think that it's an immense amount of pressure on Stafford. He's 33. His body is beat up. Yeah, he's at home. They traded multiple first-round picks to get him. It's him all the way. I don't even know what the case for Burrow looks like.
You could almost make the case that the Super Bowl, well, it doesn't not move the needle. Obviously, you'd rather win the Super Bowl than not win the Super Bowl. But look at how we've talked about Ben Roethlisberger and Aaron Rodgers in the last couple months of guys who won one early and then maybe didn't have the greatest of playoff performances after the fact. Burrow's just turned 25. He's got a long career ahead of him. You win one now, late in your career, when we're talking legacy and stuff, you're still going to get the, oh, have you won one lately questions. Matt Stafford turns 34 on Monday, and JD, you've been pretty outspoken. He's 12th all-time in career passing yards, and you don't think he's a Hall of Famer. He's about to turn 34. You add a Super Bowl to that resume.
Automatic.
That helps a lot.
With all the counting stats, because he's
automatic.
Because of the nature of his longevity and the changing dynamic of NFL football, he's there statistically, but we have to move that bar. You win the Super Bowl, you're probably, he's also got a comeback player of the year award. He's got a Pro Bowl. Like, none of that really makes a difference. But if Matt Stafford becomes a Super Bowl winning quarterback, and not only a Super Bowl winning quarterback, a Super Bowl winning quarterback in his first year out of that mess in Detroit, where suddenly there's maybe Stafford was a guy you could have won a quarterback, won a Super Bowl with, but he just happened to play for the Lions and they had two good seasons his whole career there. A good quarterback can take you from 6-10 to 8-8. They can't take you from 6-10 to the Super Bowl, I don't think. So, tons on the line here for Stafford's legacy.
Yeah, I agree with you that if he wins the Super Bowl, he's going to be a lock to get into the Hall of Fame. He might have been already. I don't know how they view these counting stats. My Hall of Fame test is just different than other people's. I want to know how many times you were top five at your position year in, year out. And the problem I have with quarterbacks now is all these guys are going to have incredible counting stats. But how many years did you really feel like you would have picked Matthew Stafford in one of your top five you got to win games? He never won a playoff series until this moment. And yes, Blake, I think what you just said there is so important, that if he does this in year one with the Rams, and I don't think he's been spectacular by any measure. He was really good in the Bucs game. He was really good in the Bucs game. But those are things that you're going to stack up now where you go, hey, he was better than Kyler Murray. He was better than Tom Brady. And he outplayed the Niners. He outplayed Jimmy Garoppolo. I know Jimmy G is not the biggest name, but that's a divisional rival at home to go to a Super Bowl. That's a nice run. That's a really nice run. Year one, I think that puts you in the Hall of Fame. I think that that discredits people like me who go, I don't think he was a top five guy. You get to point to that and say, well, if Matthew Stafford has played his whole career on an above average team, how many playoff wins would he have had? And then someone like me has to go, you know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe he is a Hall of Famer. So he gets in automatic with this Super Bowl win, which I think they're going to get. But yes, it's monumental for him compared to Burrow. Yeah, massive.
No pressure,
divide.
No pressure.
Massive divide.
Your whole legacy rides on this one game, but no pressure. Okay, this one's a Raptors question. So Jay Rich from Guelph says, hey, Blake, re-Raptors, considering the concerns about wear and tear of the starters and a need for more bench support, how much change can they make at the deadline to address that, or is it more probable to wait till the offseason?
I think they're trying right now to address that, and I don't think they're trying to address it through the lens of this team right now needs help for this year, but the chatter and the feeling has definitely shifted from Goran Dragic is a piece that some contender might want, and maybe you could pick up, you know, a second and some dead salary for Dragic at the deadline to we want to see if there's a team looking to get out of money for next year or if there's a team willing to trade a functional rotation piece with a pick attached to Dragic, because the Raptors aren't going to be a cap space team next year. They're in that weird spot where they won't have cap space and they're really far below the luxury tax. So your only means of adding are, you know, you keep your own guys, you use the mid-level exception, and you trade. And guys like Dragic and Chris Boucher aren't trade chips in the offseason because their salary counts for zero once they become free agents. So this is kind of, basically, I think they're using Dragic to get a jump on their offseason.
Is there, you have a piece coming out, right, about bad trade options.
Yes,
is that
that'll
correct?
Be on Thursday, I think, if I get it done in time today.
I'm sure you're getting a lot of questions about that. Can you give us like a good trade option for like someone like a Dragic, like that they might be actually targeting, like a name that we can like put into our brains and will into fruition?
Yeah, I think, you know, a couple of the guys you're looking at, you want guys who can give a little bit of scoring off the bench, who aren't complete defensive zeros, who fit kind of from a culture standpoint, and who probably won't carry a huge asset cost. So the two names that I've come back to a bunch, and one of them is more straight. The first one is pretty straightforward. It's Eric Gordon in Houston, where I don't know what Houston's willingness to just get out of the money owed to Eric Gordon next year is, but if they really want out of that contract, you might not have to pay a ton in asset cost beyond the salary matching anyway. The tougher one where you might have to make it a bigger deal is Bogdan Bogdanovic in Atlanta. He'd skill set wise fit really well with the Raptors, good shooter, tough physically, could create his own offense a little bit. And they're a team that they're going to be in a tax crunch soon. He's got another year after this one, plus a player. He basically has the exact same contract as Gary Trent from here moving forward. He's a guy I could see shaking loose. Atlanta's probably too set on making the playoffs and fighting into that spot to make that move. But at some point, they're going to have to get off a contract because all their guys are about to get even more paid.
Yeah, I would love Bogdanovic. On this Raptors team, personality-wise, skill set-wise, contract-wise, age, just there's really nothing that I would quibble with. That's actually a player where if the Raptors gave up that first-round pick this year especially, I wouldn't even bat an eye. I wouldn't even go, oh, no. It would be an instantaneous yes, yes, yes. You might have a better handle on this than I do, but my understanding with Eric Gordon is that his market is going to be quite significant. And so I'm not in the camp of the Raptors are going to just be able to get that guy because I feel as though there are quite a few teams that have circled him. I've seen his name attached to a lot of contenders. So the idea that the Raptors would be in, I don't see it. Maybe it ends up happening, but if the Raptors get him, to me it's going to take sure as crap more than just the Dragic contract and, hey, you're out from the money.
Yeah, we'll see. The tough part with Gordon is that, A, he makes a lot of money, so yep. Not every team has the flexibility to make a trade work. And B, there's a little bit of a weird wrinkle where he has a 2023-24 non-guaranteed amount that guarantees if you win the championship. So that's a $21 million bill. So like,
That's an amazing clause. If you win a championship,
you don't care.
Yeah.
Really? Like who cares? That's a legacy cost of the championship. But it is an interesting wrinkle if you're one of those teams that is looking at a multi-year cap window. Hey, if this all works out, we win a title. That locks in for $21 million when he's, what, 35 at that point?
I would just say that based on what we saw transpire in the last 24 hours, which was Joe Ingles being out with a season-ending injury on an expiring contract, I think at age 33, that if That feels like the Utah Jazz are making the Eric Gordon trade at a huge. They don't care about the championship clause. They don't care about the age. They don't care about anything. That is the closest thing to a getting anywhere near the shooting of angles that they are going to miss as an organization. And if you want to talk about teams that are going to be the most desperate heading into the NBA trade deadline, Utah just skyrocketed to the very top of that list.
Cavs also are an interesting player there because they have Rubio out for the year making $18 million. So he can be interesting salary matching too. And Rubio's still, he's 31. You get Rubio's bird rights. That has a little value in terms of sign and trade potential in the offseason, too. What else you got for us, Ailish?
Yeah, a little bit of similar note here. No name on the text, but we wake up this morning to find out the Raptors are in eighth position. I don't know about you guys, but after all this team has been through this year with injuries, COVID, logistics, no fans in the stands, and whatever else, this team has passed the eye test to me. And all the other tests, this is a playoff team. The rebuild is over. We just need to find some finishing pieces to make this a legit playoff team. And another, just a quick one on that, a couple texts in the text line are around the same thing about, are they going to be a playoff team and can they make some major upsets happen?
Blake, I don't know about you, but this is a weird one always to me when I get these from Raptors fans where they go, I want to be a playoff team, I want to be a playoff team, because that's like the complete opposite thing that Masai Ujiri has cared about, that he's been publicly, like, we went through this whole year
play
after
in for
year.
What was the quote.
Right, and so it's always a very strange disconnect for me that I get wanting to be in the playoffs. I'm rooting for the Raptors to be in the playoffs. I think there is a benefit to them, but when you
but
say
not just
like
to play one round,
well, but also when you just say like finishing pieces or things of that nature, that's the part where I kind of get lost in terms of what the fan base really wants right now, because I think they're in a weird position where they've got a lot of players who are very popular with the fan base, right? Even Siakam right now, who came into the year as the whipping boy, who people were ready to scrutinize and criticize at any turn, has been so excellent lately that I don't know what you'd be saying. And he was even closing the game yesterday. So I don't know what the Siakam critique is. But I think that they're in a really tough position where everyone looks at their core guys, those five dudes that were playing last night, and they go, well, you can't trade any of those guys because we love them. Well, okay, but those five guys are going to – they're all playing all these heavy minutes. They're playing playoff-caliber basketball, and they're squeaking by the Atlanta Hawks to get the 8 seed. So – what does that mean to you when you say finishing touches? How are you acquiring those pieces? What are you doing to take that next step? You don't want to be in the lottery. You don't want to accumulate talent that way. So how is this happening? It's through the mid-level exception? The Raptors are going to sign somebody who takes them from an 8 seed to the 1 seed? Like, I don't know. It just, the fan base is in a weird spot right now. I'm having real trouble discerning exactly what people want.
More practically, if you don't want them to be a playoff or play-in team, that window's passed. So where the Raptors finished in the standings last year when they had some lottery fortune and jumped up to get Scottie Barnes, they are 8 games ahead of that team right now in the standings. The window is closed to be like, you might end up in the lottery because you hit a cold stretch or someone gets hurt or whatever, but the go all the way backwards to the degree they did last year, that window's gone. Like, you're talking an 8-game cushion and like 10 teams to pass to get to how bottomed out you were last year. Realistically, with how shaky the Wizards have looked, the Pacers are out of it. The Knicks, while they came through in the wake and rake last night, don't look all that great. Like, I think the Raptors are making the play-in game. I have thought that all along. You've got to look for that internal growth, but you also have to, when you have a situation like the Dragic contract or like whatever contract, maybe it's Gary Trent in the offseason, maybe you revisit one of the core guys, you've got to be open to trade stuff because there's not the free agency path and there's not another high lottery pick path.